This is Cradle My Heart Radio with your host, Kim Cotola. Cradle My Heart Radio, preventing abortion and helping those it hurts.
This is where the healing begins. Oh, this is where the healing starts. When you come to where you're broken within, the light meets the dark. The light meets the dark.
And now, Kim Cotola and Cradle My Heart Radio.
We are here with the mission of saving lives and healing hearts after abortion. And the way that we do this is to get the truth out about what abortion is. The more people know, the less likely they are to think that it's going to be a solution to a problem in life, to a problem pregnancy. Abortion is not a solution. Abortion is a problem. It always creates more problems than it solves because it's the taking of an innocent life. Abortion is the intentional killing of an innocent human being, and it's wrong to intentionally kill an innocent human being. Therefore, abortion is wrong. That's the simple logic that, and the case that we make here every week on Cradle My Heart Radio, not to condemn those who have made that choice, because I am among that number, but instead to prevent, to help others. And to save lives, to rescue the children yet to be born. One of the stories that has really had an impact on those who know it is the story of Kermit Gosnell. But there are still so many who don't know the story. And so joining us once more to talk about this is filmmaker Anne McElhenney, who with her husband Fela McAleer has covered the Gosnell case to the point of making a film about it and now releasing a book. And Anne, it's just a joy to welcome you back to Cradle My Heart Radio.
It's always great to talk to you. So I always enjoy our time together. So thank you so much for having me back on.
So for those who are not aware of this case, after a two-month trial, 10 days of deliberation, a jury in Philadelphia convicted abortion provider Kermit Gosnell of murder. Of felony murder. He was also convicted in a manslaughter charge, third-degree murder, for the death of Karnamaya Mungar, one of his clients, who died from a drug overdose while undergoing an abortion at his clinic. There was improper anesthesia and an unlicensed person administering it. The deaths of these babies and this woman were the tip of the iceberg with Gosnell. He's now serving a life sentence, or several life sentences, I think, without the possibility of parole. And he remains pretty much unrepentant, pretty much casting himself as a hero to the poor. Anne and Felham have found very different information, not only from examining the grand jury report before the trial, but also from personally interacting with him in a prison interview. Anne, the release of the book is the latest in your efforts to bring this story forward. So tell us about Gosnell, the book. It became an instant bestseller.
Yeah, I mean, it surprised us, I have to say. You know, we published the book last Tuesday, and it shot to number three on Amazon bestsellers for the whole country. And within about 24 hours, it sold out on Amazon, on Barnes & Noble, and Books A Million. They've restocked. And the book is available. People can go to gosnellbook.com and buy it. And I think that, you know, what it indicates to us is that there's an appetite for truth among people, and people who are discovering the story and realizing that they never knew about it, they never heard about it before, are angry. And people are reading it, and people can look at Amazon and look at the reviews that have already gone up, a lot of five-star reviews of people saying they couldn't put the book down, they read it in one sitting. And it's in the details, and in the stories that we tell, where the horror is, the heartbreak is, and also inspiration, because there were some heroes here, and because of those heroes, he's in prison forever. But it's been quite extraordinary. We went to number three on the first day, and then we went to number three again on Friday. So, and it's been hovering around the very top of the bestsellers. So and that's in every category. So I think it's heartening, and it's great, because obviously we've had a lot of problems trying to get the movie out, and we're hoping that the book will help with that.
Well, part of the story with Gosnell is that there was a media blackout. And so there's the story about telling the story, which is as compelling and as dramatic as Gosnell himself. And I think it's really important for us to lay that groundwork and talk about how Phelim was in Philadelphia and someone said, you want a great story, you need to drop by and see this this trial that's unfolding. And he was shocked that there was no one there and doubly shocked at the information that was being presented. But you and Phelim are, you know, documentarians that have a point of view on the stories that you tell. But going into learning about this story, you were not pro-life, nor were you really attracted to the pro-life cause, right?
100%. That's a really good way to put it, Kim, actually. Yeah. And particularly not attracted to it either, but not, we were not advocates. By the way, we're not advocates, we're journalists who've learned a story but are disgusted and changed by knowing that story. But we certainly went in as typical leftist journalists to the story, agnostic, let's say, neutral on abortion. And my translation now to people of what neutral on abortion means is pro-abortion. So for anyone wanting to know a quick translation of neutral on abortion, that's what it is. And I think the reason so many people are, tacitly or, quietly or, pro-abortion is that they actually know nothing about it. And I've noticed people I've told this story to, people who would be pro-abortion, get a very swift education, find out stuff that goes on in America that they didn't know happened and is legal. And when they do find that out, they don't agree with it. They don't agree with it at all. And it's just extraordinary. And I suppose for leftists, there's an interesting, story in this as well. It's kind of a side story. But, for leftists who look to Europe as a kind of a, admire, very much admiring of Europe, Europe does not have anything, I mean anything remotely like the law that you have here in the United States and Canada. The only places that your laws can be compared to are places like North Korea, which, in every human being's mind is, an insane asylum, an actual insanity, state. So, and people don't like that. People don't like to learn that you go to abortion in America at 9 months. People don't like it. Mm-hmm. But I think what I'm really surprised at is people don't know, and I didn't know, and I don't like it. And I don't even like the fact that in Pennsylvania you can have an abortion at 6 months, perfectly legally. And I can tell you from my experience going around Pennsylvania, no one in Pennsylvania knows that. And I've had rows with people. I've had arguments with people where they've said, that's not true. And I'm saying, it is true. That's how much and how successful Planned Parenthood have been at covering up the truth of this industry.
And so a grand jury was actually called in because there was a tip given that Gosnell was running a pill mill. That's why they went in. And they found these appalling conditions, fetal parts everywhere, babies in freezers, dead bodies of babies in freezers, blood spattered, filth. It was horrific. So the grand jury gives their report and it goes to trial. And what we're learning really is that really what happened in these late-term abortions is that babies that were very viable and could certainly have lived were given digoxin. This is what happens, that, as you say, Anne, people have no idea. An injection of a chemical to stop the baby's heart and then a stillbirth is supposed to happen. But oftentimes the digoxin would not have completely killed the child before birth, in which case Gosnell would then snip their spinal cords at the neck.
And also in this case, what's very disturbing is that in the raid and in the subsequent raids and the subsequent searches of the clinic, they didn't find digoxin. And there is a very definite sense in which he wasn't using digoxin because it was expensive. And so that he did for a while. And certainly from the evidence and from what came up in the trial was, he probably wasn't using that at all. And he probably was using some saline solution that didn't actually, basically he was pretending to do this thing properly. But really what he did was he loaded up these women with Cytotec, which induced birth, which means that they, that the babies were delivered and the babies were delivered alive. And then he cut their necks with the scissors. And he taught all the other people who worked for him to do the same. And they did it. Which is a kind of part of the book as well that I think is sort of shocking. We highlight and describe the people who helped him, the people who enabled him to continue this for so many years, the people in the clinic, the different workers, including Steve Massoff, who was a doctor who had a medical training, had a medical degree, had never gotten a residency, but who worked, you know, as a quasi, you know, doctor. But he had a medical degree. You know, he wasn't like the other people working in the clinic who had seventh grade educations and, you know, almost semi-illiterate. So he was in a different category. And his description, which, you know, we have an awful lot of quotes from the trial, from the actual trial, from what people said under oath, under pain of perjury. And what he said is amongst the worst things I have ever read in my life. And when I read what he said, I cried at the computer. He said, I was a fireman in hell. I ran with scissors. There was just so many of them. That's how he talked. And he talked about that when they did use the digoxin, and that he would be using, he'd be working the ultrasound, and Gosnell would be with the needle. And that when they were successful, and he would stop the heart of the baby, that he would shout to Gosnell, good shot. But he said, very tellingly, that almost always Gosnell did not succeed. The children were born alive. And he said that under oath. He talked about blood running down the walls. I mean, his testimony, which we have a lot of it reproduced in this book, is unbelievable. It's like the worst thing you've ever read. And it's so chilling and so disturbing from a man who should have known better, if that makes sense, from a man who didn't have a broken background like a lot of the other people who worked at the clinic. He wasn't an alcoholic. He hadn't been sexually abused. There's no trace of any kind of trauma in his past that would have allowed him to have so readily gotten into doing this. And he didn't leave the job because of any of that horror. He eventually left the job because of a dispute with one of the workers, his father, because he had he was making a joke of one of the young girls and her father didn't like it. But that's why he left. He didn't leave because he was cutting the neck of babies with scissors, children that were alive, that were moving, that were breathing, the chest going up and down. No, that didn't move him to leave. And, you know, there's a sense going right through the book. And everyone, you know, go to gosnellbook.com. You can buy a copy right now. And you can buy an e-book, which you can deliver to your device right now. You know, there's no sense. All through the book, you get a sense of greed being a big theme. Everyone was getting these, you know, bit of cash here and a bit of cash there. All the workers got a $20 tip, every one of them, when it was a late-term abortion on the premises. Of course, Gosnell was getting the big bucks. He was getting $2,000 plus per one, and sometimes he was doing three, four, five of them a night. And so these people were getting their tips, and they liked the tip. They were getting a bit of cash under the, you know. And it's just, I use the phrase, I borrow the phrase, but the banality of evil, you know, of Hannah Arendt's phrase was used when she was at the Nuremberg trials. You know, there's a banality to it. You know, people messed around. So in amongst the carnage, in amongst this scene where the bodies were piled up, where, as you mentioned, the severed feet of the babies were in the same place as the people had the the peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. In the midst of this carnage and horror, people were joking around. You know, they were having a lot of fun. People were telling jokes. And that's why I say banality, with a banality to it. And that's, for me, that's the most chilling aspect of this whole thing. You know, it's okay. It's easier to get your head around one bad person being really bad and really evil. It's a lot more difficult to see the huge number of people colluding with that horror, you know, much in the same way as, you know, the Holocaust, you know. And I think often the Nazi Holocaust gets mentioned and used as a reference point very, very often, too often, and shouldn't be. But I feel it's appropriate here.
Anne McElhenney is our guest of the GosnellMovie.com and Gosnell Book. And we've got it linked, of course, at CradleMyHeart.org. And to me, one of the most brilliant storytelling devices that you and your team have come up with, Anne, is to tell this as a true crime drama and to cast Kermit Gosnell for what he is, as a serial killer. And when we do that, we start to realize that America should have an appetite for this story. This is what America loves to see. And yet, I mean, even when the story was unfolding, when the trial was happening, should have been the trial of the century, right? But the New York Times, I think, was one outlet that said this was local crime in Philadelphia. And there's still this persistent notion put forth by the abortion industry. He's an outlier. He's an aberration. This isn't anything that anybody, of course, you know, we reject him and his, you know, what he was doing was illegal. Abortion is legal, is safe. Your investigation has found something very different.
Yeah, I mean, just the media piece itself, I just want to mention that. I mean, with the media piece itself, you have the Washington Post. You had Sarah Cliff of the Washington Post describing this as a local story. You know, and here's what your listeners know, unfortunately, far too well. Every person on the planet Earth who has a mobile phone, whoever watches the news, who reads the newspaper, knows the name Michael Brown. Michael Brown, you know, was a guy who stole from a corner shop and assaulted an immigrant who owned that corner shop in Ferguson, Missouri, then walked along the middle of the street in Ferguson, Missouri, and then tried to beat a police officer to death while that police officer was sitting in his car, and he got shot. Michael Brown got shot in the middle of all of that. Everyone knows who Michael Brown is, and in Ferguson, they're thinking of putting up a monument to him. No one wants to put a monument up to Tamika Shaw, and no one's ever heard of her. She was a 22-year-old black woman who died after a botched abortion at Kermit Gosnell's clinic. And none of the Black Lives Matter people, and I actually genuinely believe that Black Lives Matter, but Black Lives don't seem to matter to Black Lives Matter movement. They were very absent to stand up for Tamika Shaw. They're very absent to stand up for all these babies that piled up in the basement at 3801 Lancaster, the majority of which, those babies, were black. You know, so that it's absolutely extraordinary. And the dereliction of duty on behalf of the journalist you mentioned in the New York Times, appalling. You know, appalling lack of coverage for this. You know, everyone in the world knows who Trayvon Martin is. Everyone knows these other stories that the New York Times and CNN have selected as important. But they selected and decided that this was not important. And anyone can still check it out. And we do a huge chapter in the book on this media malpractice, we call it. That's what the chapter is called, media malpractice, where they just don't bother to cover this. And it wasn't neglect, and it's not laziness, and it's not incompetence. It was a choice. Because the problem was that the story brought up too many inconvenient questions about abortion. Because obviously what Kermit Gosnell did was murder, and he went to prison for it. But what the trial really highlighted, and what the jury were really aware of, was that the difference between him going to jail for murder and what goes on legally all over the country, routinely every day, is a couple of inches. So doing what he did inside the womb is absolutely perfectly fine, and doing it a couple of inches outside the womb suddenly becomes murder, and it doesn't make sense. It doesn't even make sense that in Pennsylvania there's a cutoff of 24 weeks, so they stopped doing abortions at 24 weeks. In fact, it's 23 weeks and 6 days. So how is this? So 23 weeks and 6 days is fine, but 24 weeks and 1 day is 100% different? Is it absolutely illegal? Is it absolutely wrong? You know, once you start digging down into that from an existential point of view, you're starting to ask really, really awkward questions I think they don't want to have that argument, that conversation.
So you've documented it. We've got the story on film. You had you had some A-listers from Hollywood working on this. The film is ready to be distributed, right? And no one will distribute it.
Correct. We went to every large distribution company in Hollywood, and every last one of them said no. And, you know, the most frequent excuse was, it's too controversial. Now, these are the same production companies. These are the same distribution companies, I should say, who have put out a film called Obvious Child, which is a romantic comedy about abortion. They put out the Lily Tomlin road movie where a grandmother goes around trying to collect money for her granddaughter's abortion.
Yes.
You know, so don't tell me, you know, don't talk to me about controversy, please. This is a lie. They're using this. This is a complete lie. They do not want this movie out because people who see this movie are changed by it. I just had a group of people, a small group of people, just watched it in St. Louis. Some of them might be listening today. And, I mean, people were in floods of tears afterwards. I had wonderful people coming up, even a 15-year-old boy who came up and said, this needs to be seen by everyone. This needs to be seen across, you know. And that's why we're not looking to do, you know, some kind of fringe kind of release. This is going to be released in movie theaters. It's going to go to TV. It's going to go to VOD. It's going to go on Amazon. It's going to go on Netflix. It's going to go everywhere. We're not going to do. We're not the movie that's going to sit in the corner in some kind of, you know, sad zone. This is a major movie. And the production values are very high. As you say, we've got great actors. It really looks marvelous. I've not heard one complaint from anyone who's seen it who hasn't been stunned by how good it is. And that's actually the problem. That's why Hollywood don't want it.
Mm. Anne McElhenney is our guest of the Gosnell book, Gosnell movie. And so the strategy, which I think is hopefully going to be successful, is, okay, let's get a book out. Let's get a best-selling book. And the demand for the film may follow, we hope.
Yes,
I'll speak for myself. I'll speak for myself.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, I hope the demand for the film will follow.
Yeah, I know, but you know what? It's the whole thing with this, Kim, is it's actually a privilege to be getting to do this. And, you know, how difficult every part of this has been, and every part of this has been difficult. We're still optimistic. And I have to say, the response on Tuesday was outstanding. And I don't know if you know this, but then, you know, we went through the week. We started the week in Vermont with Mark Stein. We went on to New York. I was on the O'Reilly show on Fox News. And then I was on Rush Limbaugh's show with Mark Stein again. And then, if all that wasn't enough, then we got an invitation to the White House to meet Vice President Pence and to meet Kellyanne. And we met Kellyanne Conway. So I'm even getting emotional even thinking about that. There is something afoot here as far as I'm concerned. And I do think with the appointment yesterday to the Supreme Court, we're seeing some changes here. And I think this is a really, really good time for the movies, for the book, and for people to, you know, to really galvanize around strong, clear, true stories that they can quote to people when they're having their debates.
Yes. And, you know, this is something you and I have spoken a number of times. I so admire your work and your truth telling. But you and I have never really talked about whether or not you're a person of faith. And I don't want to put you on the spot here, but this is a Christian broadcast. And, you know, as I mentioned, I had an abortion in my past, and it's the love of Jesus Christ that redeemed me from that. But you're not arguing that Gosnell was wrong because you're a Christian. Gosnell was wrong because it was evil, right? Because not just him personally, but his operation, as you say, the other people that he drew into it and who willingly participated, some of them. Some were almost like trauma victims that were captive. I don't know if that's a fair characterization. But tell me just a little bit.
I think that's very fair. And I think it's really interesting, this question that you're asking me. And so I'm going to tell you, and people who buy the book, it's the preface of the book, in fact. What you're asking is answered in the preface of the book, because it's what happened to me personally. I mean, this book is a piece of journalism. However, the preface is slightly different to that, where I write just an essay about what happened to me. And here's what happened to me, Kim. So I was, as I don't know if you know the phrase, off the wagon or whatever. So I had kind of not been very religious for a long time. I hadn't been to a church or hadn't prayed or any of that. And when I started to work on this story, and particularly I remember distinctly reading the testimony of Steve Massoff for that chapter where we write about Steve Massoff, and I started to cry at the computer because I found it frightening. I found what I read really frightening, and I found it really frightening that there was so much evil in that place, and that was happening around, and you know, people were going around their daily lives, and this happened, and this was happening, and I knelt down at the computer and I prayed, and it was the first time I had prayed for a really long time, and somebody asked me about this recently, and I said, you know, this story has brought me back to prayer, and that's the truth, and I do pray. Because I think what happens to people maybe in life is that, you know, you have nice friends and you have a nice family and you surround yourself with people who, you know, for good or bad, you know, and there may be the odd, you know, there's lots of trouble people have too. But people don't, very, very few people, thanks be to God, come close to evil. I think very few people have it touch them. And it's a good thing. I think it's good, actually. But when you do touch it, you know it, and you... And you have to find a place to put that. And I think it's very hard to know what to do with that in the absence of faith and in the absence of God. And that is what happened to me. And I do pray, and it did help. And it's very interesting. I have gone around the country. I've spoken at events. And at the beginning of it, I was very raw. When I started with this, I used to go to places and I was really raw. And I spoke at one event in North Carolina. A fantastic little event there, and I met a woman of wonderful wonderful people there. But somebody, anyway, someone left that event and then sent me a text message and said, "I have a prayer circle. You know, all these people are praying for you now, and you're being prayed for." And I just texted back and I said, "I feel it. I know."
And we do need to pray. And a part of the hope is that eyes will be opened as the story is told. Thank you so much for sharing with us. We're out of time, but I could talk with you all day, Anne. Thank you so much.
Likewise, Kim. I always love speaking with you. Please just get people to go, you know, godsnotebook.com. We'll bring them to a landing page.
Awesome. Anne, thank you so much. And we've got it linked at cradlemyheart.org.
Thank you so much. God bless.
Now stay with us. Coming up on Faith Radio, we'll take your phone calls and get your reaction, as well as taking a look at some of the top life stories in the news here at Cradle My Heart Radio.
A safe place to connect with others, finding God's love after abortion. This is Cradle My Heart Radio.
This is where the healing begins.
Cradle My Heart with Kim Cotola. Join the conversation. Call toll-free 800-811-3003. 800-811-3003.
Thank you so much for being with us, and thank you for making us part of your evening on a big night for entertainment. I'm glad that you chose to join us here at Cradle My Heart Radio and be a part of the conversation. I really hope that you will call. I'd love to hear your voice tonight. First of all, we just heard a stunning interview with Anne McElhenney. And after we recorded that interview midweek, more things happened. After, as Anne said, the book shot to the very top of the Amazon bestseller list, and it sold out, the book was nowhere to be found on the New York Times bestseller list. And so the question is there a blackout? Really, really discouraging. And both Anne and Phelim were in the media and in the news this week talking about their disappointment and their continued determination to tell the story. And so they really do need our prayers. And, you know, as a person who has had an abortion, it's very difficult to listen to the Gosnell story. I wanted to support that the work that they're doing. I bought the book. I spent some time in the early going. It's so well written, and they've written it as a crime story, and that's what it is. But what the thing that I hope that you don't miss is that they want us to see that it's always a crime, whether it happens at the hands of somebody like Gosnell in a crummy, awful place where you wouldn't send your dog for care, or whether it happens in a cleaned up, sanitized, modern, nice looking facility, the abortion spa we heard about on this program last year, right, in D.C. and Baltimore, I think. It doesn't matter. It's always a crime. You know, I realize that legally, that's incorrect. The law is allowing for it. But it's a crime against humanity. The humanity of the children comes through in the story. And, you know, if we've had an abortion, we don't need to be taught that. We know it firsthand. It can be a very, very difficult story. So I thought one of the ways that we could have a conversation about this is to ask you to share with me and with our listeners your favorite verse on forgiveness. And it seems like a kind of a whiplash transition there. But I had the opportunity to speak before a group of women last month, just a week ago Saturday, to talk about celebrating being forgiven after abortion, celebrating the freedom that we have in Christ. And it was a really hard assignment. You know, I talked about that a little bit last week. It was a really hard assignment because victory after something so devastating and crushing and breaking to our spirit and our hearts can be tough, really tough to think about what that looks like, and to live it out is tough. But the more that I studied, then the more that I learned, the more that the message came into from a very big funnel into a very small conclusion, which is forgive. And what is God? I spent a lot of time contemplating, you know, God's purpose in forgiving us after abortion, because it's heinous. Not all of us are 100% accountable for, you know, the evil at the heart of it. Many people who seek to change the law, if not the majority in the pro-life camp anyway, would say, if we change the law, we need to prosecute the providers, not the women. In most cases, the women are seen as victims of this whole system. And so I'm not suggesting, more judgment. I'm not suggesting that even the law is the answer for us who've had an abortion. The law is certainly the answer for children because, wow, I heard that quote from Martin Luther King Jr. last month when we celebrated the anniversary of his birth. And he said, the law can't make you love me, but it can keep you from lynching me, right? The law can't make women love their children, but it can stop them from killing them. It does, and it did in the past, and it can again. And that is what I would like to see, and I won't dance around that. I'm not ashamed to say that, and I'm not afraid to say that. That's where I stand. I want abortion to be unthinkable because it's the intentional killing of an innocent human being, and it's morally wrong. And it always creates more problems than it can possibly solve. So you know where I stand on that. So if you've had an abortion, I see this pattern where there's an ongoing healing that God will provide because it's just like losing any other member of the family. In some ways, time does not heal that wound because it's Christmas again and they're still not here, right? Anyone who's lost a close loved one, you know what I mean about the nature of grief and how you can believe that it's resolved and then one day something will happen and it's so fresh because emotions don't know time, right? And so we've lost a family member. So, you know, the healing will be ongoing in Christ, but I think there's an ongoing need to forgive as well. And I really think in this rhetorical question, you know, why would God forgive this? A big part, of course, is his love, and that's who he is. But it's also to make us forgivers. It's to make of us super forgivers because we've been forgiven so much. That's what Jesus was trying to say in Luke 7:47. The one forgiven much loves much. Can we find it in our hearts to forgive a Gosnell? What a victory that only Christ can provide. We had a short Bible study at church, and I really appreciate Vicar Eric at our church at Faith Lutheran in Sharpsburg, Georgia, leading us in this study. And someone in the back of the room said, forgiveness is irrational. It doesn't make any sense that we would forgive that. But that's what God calls us to do and makes us capable of doing. 1-800-811-3003, your favorite verse on forgiveness. Or the favorite teaching. Or something you've learned in following out the command to forgive that Jesus gave us in Matthew 6. 1-800-811-3003 is our number. And our resource tonight is Defending Life by Professor Francis Beckwith of Baylor University. He is the one who has developed this pro-life syllogism, and a syllogism is something that helps us reason through a big problem, and it's based on premises that lead to a logical conclusion. And Professor Beckwith's syllogism is a little more complex than this. He has 4 points, and he uses a little more scholarly language, but essentially it is a 3-point argument, which says, abortion is the intentional killing of an innocent human being. It is wrong to intentionally kill an innocent human being. Therefore, abortion is morally wrong. If you want to know more about how to think that through, about the philosophy of the value of life from the very beginning, based in the science that says life begins at conception, this is a great volume to have. And it will take you some time to get through it because, you know, Professor Beckwith is assuming that you're going to come right along with him with some very deep intellectual arguments and thoughts on this. But it's a wonderful resource for pro-life. It's called Defending Life, Francis Beckwith. And we have a copy if you'll call and share your favorite verse on forgiveness tonight. 1-800-811-3003 is our number. 1-800-811-3003. You know, I have had to think about forgiveness through the years, not only connected with abortion, but with, you know, so many other issues in life. And what happens to you and working your way out of new problems when we fail to forgive. I've been through all of that. I would love to hear your process, your thoughts, your expressions. One of the very best things someone told me years ago that has really served me in my walk with Jesus is that when someone has done an injustice to us, we forgive as obedience to Jesus. And then if our emotions don't agree with our will, which is submitted to God by going ahead and saying in our will that we forgive, if our emotions don't agree with that decision of the will, we can pray that the Holy Spirit will bring our emotions in line with our will. And I'll tell you, that works. I have seen that happen in many, 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 many ways, in many situations where a real injustice was suffered. And the person absolutely was unrepentant and didn't deserve forgiveness. And yet I'm free of any feelings of resentment. And I'm free of the sting and the pain and the hurt of the injustice for having forgiven. Tell me about how it's worked for you. Is there a Bible verse that has been extremely helpful? 1-800-811-3003 is our number. For those who call and join us on the air, a copy of Defending Life. Francis Beckwith, a professor at Baylor University, has written just a wonderful resource to help us think through the arguments. And it's important that we do so. You know, I keep a Facebook page. I hope you'll go there and like the page so that you can get our updates in your news feed. It's at Cradle My Heart, Facebook.com/CradleMyHeart, or once you get on Facebook, just enter at Cradle My Heart and you'll go to our page. So we posted that, you know, this interview was going to air about Gosnell. And right away, you know, people will show up and I allow some detractors on my page, and I kept a very free hand with it on this particular post because it gives people an opportunity to engage and to really, you know, help people think through what it is that they're standing for. And some people, you know, I don't like the term troll, but it's a kind of a handy handle, isn't it? I mean, it really says to me, a troll is someone who's trying to hijack a conversation without any real interest in listening and for an agenda of their own. And, you know, that happens whenever we post anything about this topic, because people may not know my backstory. They may not know my motivation, which is to prevent abortion and help those whom it has hurt. I want to prevent abortion because I know the damage that it does to families and to women and the cost. You know, people may not know that. They may think that I'm, I don't know what they think. They may think that I'm, you know, trying to take away their rights. Okay. You know, I mean, you know where those conversations go. If you are pro-life and you're vocal about it, you've had those conversations yourself. But wow, you know, we had almost 1,000 people responding to the post about this broadcast. And, you know, we've shared this with you in the past about how that goes and how some are completely beyond being persuaded. But that's okay, too, as long as we speak truth and give them something to think about. So let's give them something to think about here. If anyone is listening, is not yet persuaded, on the topic of forgiveness. And let's go to the phones. Okay, we'll take a short break, and then we'll go to the phones and talk with Sue, and she has a verse to share with us. And I hope you will, too. Join us, and we'll get a great pro-life resource into your hands as well. Phones are open, 800-811-3003 here at Cradle My Heart Radio.
A safe place to connect with others. Finding God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cattola. Call toll-free at 800-811-3003. Seeking to help others find God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cattola. Call toll-free at 800-811-3003.
Thanks so much for being with us. Our phones are open, 800-811-3003. I'm Kim Cattola, and we're talking about the need to forgive after abortion. We're talking about the need to forgive. Even if you've never had an abortion, you may need to forgive people who are marching in favor of abortion rights, people who are loudly proclaiming abortion rights in social media, people who will say they've had an abortion, but they're unrepentant. There are lots of things that may need to be forgiven in our hearts around this conversation, some of which may impact us personally and some of which don't. And maybe it was something else that led you to the need to forgive. We'd love to hear your favorite verse on forgiveness. 1-800-811-3003 is our number. And our pro-life resource tonight is Defending Life by Professor Francis Beckwith of Baylor University. Let's go to the phones and welcome Sue. Thanks so much for joining us here on Cradle My Heart Radio. How are you tonight?
I'm just fine.
Well,
I continually appreciate your program and receive so much from it.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that, Sue. It's a really encouraging word from you for me today. So have you got a verse for us about forgiveness?
Psalm 130, verse 3, if you, Lord, kept a record of sins, Lord, who could stand?
Tell me why that's significant for you.
I personally haven't had an abortion, but I have a lot of regrets and in my life, and God's forgiveness and God's restoration matters so much to me and has freed me up, continues to. And we're asking for scripture verses about forgiveness, that verse popped in my head, and I wanted to share it.
Well, and it's a wonderful one because it's very germane to the topic at hand. Thank you so much, Sue. Hang on the line and we'll get your address so we can send you a copy of Defending Life by Francis Beckwith. If God kept a record of our wrongs, no one could stand, right? I mean, it's such a wonderful verse, Psalm 130, verse 3. If God kept a record, you know, and what we need to understand in the transaction between ourselves and God after abortion is that God has canceled that debt. It's a scandalous thing that he would do that for us. As I mentioned before the break, it's irrational for God to do that. He does it because he loves us in a way that supersedes the actions that we can take. Now, it isn't just that God loves us and so we are forgiven. We have to understand that someone paid the penalty. The wages of sin is death, it says in Romans. Someone paid the penalty for that sin and to buy us that forgiveness. And it was, of course, our Savior, Jesus Christ, with his precious blood. So that is the only way that God can cancel the debt, that God can say there's no record of it. The official record of it is gone. You know, that is the only way that that can happen. And that is the good news. That is the good news. And after abortion, I think one of the biggest barriers, we've talked about this before, but maybe you didn't hear the broadcast that time. But one of the biggest barriers is that we have grief and our emotional wires get crossed. And we think, well, she just said I'm forgiven, but I just can't believe that. I don't feel forgiven. I had a hand in the destruction of the life of another human being. I not sure I even want to be forgiven for that. It's the worst thing I've ever done. I can never forgive myself. I mean, I used to go through all of those emotions. And I want you to know that that is not God's plan for us, nor his will. But what happens is that oftentimes that's a grief reaction. That's because your heart has an unrequited love for the child and does not know where to place it. Our culture certainly doesn't say, well, here, let's have a funeral. Let's have a memorial. Let's have a healing service. Let's have everyone gather around and share stories and uphold you. And no, none of that can happen after abortion, even though, as we know, we've lost a family member. And so sometimes we read the feelings of grief, we read it as guilt. And so it's very hard to believe that we are forgiven. But the good news is we are. We are forgiven. And really, for us, we have such an obligation to forgive because of that. And, you know, that's my life verse is Luke 7:47. You know, she's the one forgiven much, loves much. The sinful woman came and with a lavish display, you know, cried and wiped Jesus' feet with her hair after her tears bathed his feet. I mean, it's such a picture in the story of the religious community observing this and Jesus reading their minds, even as they were wondering, well, gee, if he's supposed to be holy, why is he letting her touch him? And he's reading their minds because he's not only holy, but he's God, and asks them about forgiveness, asks them about, you know, who's more grateful after having a debt forgiven? Who's more grateful, someone with a huge debt or a smaller debt? And even the religious guys have to say, probably the guy with the bigger debt. It's common sense. And Jesus says, yeah, the one forgiven much loves much. He protected her with that story and the way that he told it as they were trying to condemn her further. They stood in the way of her forgiveness. You know, I really hope none of us ever allow our faith to do that. And, you know, if you're broken over abortion, if you're standing in the way of someone's forgiveness over this issue, look at the position that puts you in. Jesus says, no, he's got a much better place for us at his feet, forgiven, empowered to freely forgive, because justice lies with him. And I'll tell you something else that has happened for me when I have forgiven people that I know to be untrustworthy. And this is a lesson that's really pretty fresh for me. And I'm a mature person. I'm growing more mature spiritually. But I found that forgiving someone I know to be untrustworthy did the most remarkable thing. It freed me to no longer extend trust to the person that I know to be untrustworthy. You know, holding a grudge, trying to keep track of all the wrongs and all the injustices and all the letdowns and all of the abuses, and guard myself and protect myself in that relationship did not work. The person continued to behave in the most untrustworthy fashion. And really, you know, the old saying, fool me once, it's your fault. Fool me twice, it's mine. I don't know if it was my fault or his fault. I know that he was untrustworthy, and it was foolish of me to keep extending trust. But when I forgave him for all of it, it was like a light switch turned on. And I said, oh, he's not trustworthy. I don't have to keep extending trust. And the whole dynamic and whole relationship, everything changed with that person. There's so many advantages and benefits to forgiving as we have been forgiven. And the sermon this week was on the man who was lowered through the roof. And one of the things that I, again, want to leave you with was this idea from the sermon from Vicar Eric at Faith Lutheran, who said, you know, the crowd and the religious leaders were sitting there impeding the rest from getting to Jesus. But the carriers were the ones who helped the afflicted person to access the forgiveness that he needed and the healing. And he said that, you know, that in that story, in the Gospels, it's very important for us to realize that the Jesus was more concerned with the forgiving than with the healing. Oh, he healed him, but he forgave him first. And I think that there's a real lesson for us there as to the priority it is that God has on forgiving us, again, to make us super forgivers because we have been forgiven so, so much. Thank you for joining us. If you want to know more about our programs and our guests, please join us on our website at cradlemyheart.org. We're on social media on Facebook and Twitter, and would love to have you access the ministry there. And also, when you do visit, sign up for our e-newsletter. You'll find out more about events that we're staging and other things that might give you a chance to connect with us in person. I would love to do that. Join us again next week at this time. Please do listen, and remember, Jesus loves you, and so do we.